We received a letter last Thanksgiving from an inmate at Oklahoma's Lawton Correctional Facility. Now, we get a lot of mail from inmates, usually a request to help them prove their innocence, but this man knew he was guilty. He was finishing a prison sentence for having sex with an underage teenage girl, and he was nervous about getting out. It's hard for a sex offender to get a job, to find an apartment, to talk about his crime. But this one wanted to. His name is Juan Guerrero. He told us he used a prison radio to listen to Here and Now. So our Peter O'Dowd wrote back, and soon Peter and Juan started speaking on the phone. They made this call 4 days before Juan was released.
I've been in here, you know, 6.5 years, and you don't know how many people I've seen come back. I don't want that to be me at all. So I'm scared. I'm scared that I'm not going to survive.
So Peter is with us now. He'll be guiding us through this story, which might not be appropriate for children. And Peter, after this call, you go to Oklahoma City to meet Juan. But first, you dug into court documents. So tell us what you found about his past.
Yeah, if there is such thing as a typically bad childhood, Juan had it. He was arrested several times as a kid, stuff like vandalism, stealing a car. So I was very skeptical of this guy. But I was also curious because there are 800,000 registered sex offenders in the United States, and rarely, really, do we ever get a chance to hear from them.
And we want to rush to say right away there are thousands of their victims in the U.S. as well. And you tried to find his, but you couldn't. So we have just one side, the story of Juan. From a town outside of Fresno, very agricultural area. He told you his mother was an alcoholic who worked in the fields. Pick it up from there.
Yeah, in his 20s, he decides to grow up. He moves to Oklahoma City, and he enrolls at the local campus at Oklahoma State University. Now, I found out later that his professors loved him, and he was doing very well at school. He was standing out as a success story, but just when things seemed to be getting better, he makes a terrible mistake.
Right, and we're going to talk more about that. But let's go now to the bus stop in Oklahoma City where you met Juan the day he gets out of prison.
We plan to meet in the morning at the Greyhound station. It's where you'd expect to find a bus depot, at the edge of town, in the middle of America.
Kansas City, Des Moines, Minneapolis, and all points north. We're about to be leaving on Dock 4.
The bus won't pull up for another 30 minutes, but Danny Hurst is already here.
Of all the students I've had, he's got to be probably in the top five.
Hurst worked with thousands of students in his career. He was the director of a support program at the local campus of OSU that helped low-income first-generation students like Juan. He's retired now, but Hurst remembers that Juan started a nonprofit to wipe out gang graffiti.
The first few weeks and months, he would come in and just study the dictionary because he was trying to improve his English skills. And I'd never seen a student do that.
How are you feeling today, 30 minutes before Juan comes through the door?
Well, I'm extremely anxious. I've got lots of emotions. I love the guy. I believe in the guy. Very emotional, I guess.
Juan's math and English tutor are here, too. They've kept in touch over the years. And when the bus pulls up, Juan steps off wearing prison-issued white sneakers. His teachers rush out to greet him.
There he is.
Oh, he looks great. Hey,
Juan.
Look great, man. Yeah, look great.
So wonderful to see you like this.
But everyone's either smiling or crying. English tutor Anne Schenck is relieved to recognize her former student.
I was afraid that your beautiful smile and the glint in your eye would be gone, but it's not.
My heart is still the way it is, and my smile is still here because of you guys. Without you guys, I would have gave up.
Juan's teachers say they worried about him in prison, and now they worry about where he's going to live. So Danny Hurst went door to door before Juan got out and asked his neighbors, would you mind if my former student moved in?
That was going to be a challenge.
Would it bother you to have a sex offender living next door?
It was difficult. You know, I think most of them know me and kind of trust me and like us as neighbors, but they were very hesitant. About half of them said they preferred him not to stay.
Juan's crime will follow him wherever he goes. On a summer night in 2009, he invited a 14-year-old girl to his house. Juan was twice her age. He worked at a shelter for troubled teens where the victim had been living. They'd known each other for a few months, but nothing had happened between them until that night in July when everything happened. Court documents say Juan got her drunk on beer and vodka.
His job was to counsel juveniles in trouble, but tonight a 29-year-old man is in trouble, accused of raping a 14-year-old. As John Jordan tells us, it's
so many years later, Juan is out of prison, but worried about his options. With nowhere to go in Oklahoma, he's heading back to California, maybe picking oranges, like his mother did.
It's going to be hard, but what can I do? I remember as a little kid, you know, telling my mom, you know, I don't want to do this my whole life, and but yet I'm going back to the same thing that she was doing as when I was a kid.
Those are some of Juan Guerrero's first moments out of prison. As we've been telling you, our own Peter O'Dowd contacted him when he was in prison after he wrote us a letter, and these are the events that followed. But Peter, later that day, you tag along as Juan goes to the courthouse to pay some fines. He has to register as a sex offender in Oklahoma City before leaving for California.
Yep.
And as he said, he faces a future of people wondering if he can be trusted. So how is he handling that?
It's interesting. There's actually a lot of research out there that says recidivism rates for sex offenders is actually quite low, lower in many cases than other crimes. But Juan makes the point that it's hard to get back into society. He has to take a polygraph test about his sexual history as a part of his parole. He wears a GPS ankle collar. But at the same time, you can totally understand why there are major concerns about keeping track of sex offenders. In Juan's case, the victim's mother told the court that that night with Juan and the rape changed her daughter. She said that she'd become reticent and then angry, and that she acted differently around older men. And her mother believed that Juan leveraged his position of power at the shelter. When I sat down with Juan and also his ex-girlfriend, Rihanna Lindsay, who stayed with him for some time while he was in prison, Juan fully agreed that he manipulated his victim.
I was letting this power get to me, and I shouldn't have.
I read in the report that she told you, you know, you could go to prison for this while you were sort of in the heat of the moment. And you said, yeah, I know. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. I should have took that advice, because at the time, you know, nobody thinks they're going to get caught for what they're doing, you know, and when you're drinking. And I should have took her advice. You know, maybe she was more mature than myself.
People will want to know because of your status now. Like, was this a one-time thing? Was this something that you, like, is this like a desire that you have in you forever? Like, I mean, what do you think and how do you explain that to people?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is not a desire that I have, you know. I mean, I don't ever want to do this again. You know, I guess at the same time, too, I didn't think it was an expansive deal where I got, you know, 9 years, you know. I mean, I did 6.5 on those, and I was like, wow, you know, this is a really bad deal that I did, you know, and especially reading the reports, the victims standing out there, their families. I was like, wow, you know, I really hurt these people. I really hurt my community. I really hurt them, you know, and I learned. I'm not ever going to do something like this again, ever.
So you never had the urge to be with children before that or after?
Oh, no, you know, and I was abused as a kid too, you know, sexually and stuff like that. And I remember when I used to work at DHS, you know, and...
At the shelter?
Yes. Okay. There was these little kids, you know, that used to come. I was real nice to them, you know, real positive to them. And there was one certain one that his dad would never do anything to him, you know, help him or anything. And I would sit there, you know, I would fill up his bathtub, you know, and I would just be thinking, like, what am I doing here? You know, I remember my uncle doing things to me, you know, and then there was like this demon in my head telling me, you know, not to do anything, but like, you know, recalling the memories, you know, and I felt bad inside. So it's not like I had these urges to do anything. I think this one thing was just that happened, and I learned my lesson from it.
My opinion is that he didn't have urges, you know, to be with these young girls or whatever. I think what he had is a lust problem, because it wasn't like, you know, he was flirting with young girls or anything like that. He was flirting with women. It doesn't make it right. It was very wrong. You know, if it was my daughter, he would still have gone to prison. So, you know, it's unfair to ask questions like, you know, did you have the urges or would you do it again or anything like that? In my eyes, it was a lust problem.
Yeah, and I'm asking the question because those are the questions he's going to face out in the world. This is his new reality because of this.
He committed the crime. You know, he's guilty, and now he has to wear that scarlet letter. I believe that he'll do great things with it, regardless.
Do you love him?
I do. Am I in love with him? You know, do I want to be his wife? You know, that's not my decision to make. And, you know, it would be a hard life. a life that I never asked for or never expected, and to have the strength to do it, you know, I would definitely, you know, have to have God carrying me through this relationship.
And you haven't had that message yet?
I haven't asked for it.
That's the voice of Juan Guerrero's ex-girlfriend, Rihanna Lindsay. How have things been going since he got out, Peter?
Well, he got a job. He's working nights at a produce factory. He starts college again today. He got a grant through a program that helps ex-convicts get back on their feet. He's trying hard, but he's struggling. When I was going through court records, I found a statement that Juan made to the judge after getting arrested, and he quoted Martin Luther King Jr. It was a line that said, "There is some good in the worst of us and some evil in the best of us." And I think that if we're honest with ourselves, we could probably all relate to that just a little bit. But for Juan, that is an idea that sort of follows him around in a pretty heavy way. And I think it will for a while.
That's Here Now's Peter O'Dowd. And again, you made an effort to contact Juan's victim or her family or someone to speak and be her voice. And we have not yet been able to do that.
That's right.
But we will follow the story. Peter, thank you.
You're welcome.